Hello and welcome to This Is A Token with Alex Monroe, the podcast that celebrates all things jewellery. I've spent most of my life designing and making jewellery, but what really interests me is what it means to other people. This is a podcast where we ask our guests about the jewellery they cherish most of all. We'll explore the moving, fascinating and often surprising stories connected to each piece and those emotional bonds that we just can't do without. My guest today is Esme Young. Esme is, of course, a judge on the Great British Sewing Bee, along with Patrick Grant. But I know her best as a brilliant fashion designer from my younger days in London. She set up her label and shop called Swanky Modes in Camden with some friends in the 70s. And it was really influential label throughout the 70s and 80s. She's done all sorts of work for films and TV. She made that incredible dress for Linda, I'm going to probably pronounce this wrong, Linda Kozlowski in Crocodile Dundee, which is now in the V&A collections. Esme teaches fashion and pattern cutting at St. Martin's. St. Martin's is, just in case you didn't know, the absolute coolest, bestest place in the world to study fashion. And she has a book out called Behind the Seams. But above all, Esme is a great jewellery wearer. So we've got so much to talk about. I think you're going to need pictures of everything. So we're going to put photos of everything and Esme's jewellery and links to the book and everything on the podcast website. We're in our London Bridge studio today. Slightly confusingly, we have Esme on sound recording. So our Esme is kind of Esme.
No, I'm Esme.
Oh, Esme. And I swore. Okay, I've bugged this all up.
Are you Esme too?
Yeah. Okay, so we two really Esme. Well, it makes it confusing as well. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't make it that
look,
it's not that confusing.
Look, we've got Esme on sound recording. We've got Connie and Blueberry the dog. But I'd like to say a big thank you so much for giving it your time. And welcome to This Is A Token to Esme Young.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I'm just so pleased to meet you because you've sort of been part of my life for so long and we just love Sewing Bee. So it's like, well, everything
it's,
good.
It's very, very positive.
It so is positive. Yeah. There was a time on TV where you'd have sort of reality things and people were a bit nasty to people.
And that's true, yeah.
And I never liked that. But yeah. This is so adorable. Because I feel sad when the series ends. It's like your friends have gone from your front room, you know. And you sort of go, what are we going to do? But then luckily something like Bake Off or, you know, the Pottery Throwdown comes on or something. So, no, we love that show. I grew up making my own clothes. We were talking earlier a bit about how much as a young man I loved fashion and I made my own clothes. I couldn't find for you some horrendous photos of outfits that I made. When I was young, I used to make outfits for girlfriends, but it feels like, certainly for sort of arty people, it was certainly something that we did a lot more in the kind of 70s and 80s.
Also, I learnt sewing at school,
yeah,
and I was partially deaf as a child, so that's how I communicated through creative stuff. I can remember coming back from school with my mum before I went to boarding school, and making this little house for a fairy woven out of grass. And
wow.
My mum was going, come on. No.
Then you sound a bit like me, where I seem to be much more visual than other people. So I wasn't very interested or good at sort of writing or studying or anything like that. I just like to draw, but I particularly also like to make things. I would have gone to fashion college if I had have got in. You teach at St. Martin's now. I applied but didn't get in.
Did you?
Yeah, I applied to St. Martin's in Brighton, I think, and didn't get in. So I ended up, sort of jewellery came as a second option because I thought, well, it's still making stuff and it's still fashion.
Well, it's quite interesting. So I went to St. Martin's.
Yeah.
And I did graphics.
Did you? Oh, I thought, I just assumed, because I was sort of looking you up and it said you went to St. Martin's. I assumed you did fashion and now you're back teaching there. But you did graphics.
Yeah, I did graphics. It was in Charing Cross Road when I was there. There was a big community. We knew the sculptors, we knew the painters, we knew the fashion people, the photographers.
Yeah.
So I did foundation at Cambridge and it was very graphics based. If you see what I mean, there was quite a few famous illustrators who'd been there. And I had no idea you could do fashion. No idea whatsoever. But I met somebody called Willie Walters, and I helped her with her final collection. I also modelled final collection. And then we decided to open a shop because there was nothing in the shops we wanted to buy, really.
This was at St. Martin's, and you were hanging out with, you were just sort of mixing with all the fashion. Because I think I made a joke as we walked up, and I was at art school in the 80s, it was like the fashion students were like, they were a little bit special and separate, and they were also all gorgeous and well-dressed. So we wanted to be friends with the fashion students, but I don't think we were cool enough for it. When you were there, it was very much all mixing together.
It absolutely was. And I can remember we used to have these parties at Christmas at the college. One year I designed the invites. This trolley came down with a giant Christmas cake on it. And then this girl went, and she was topless.
Amazing.
And that was 1971 or something.
Back in the day. This was St. Martin's building that was sort of, is it the one at Holborn kind of?
No, that was Central. It was the one that was in...
So St. Martin's was different, and then it became Central St. Martin's later when they moved to that building, and now it's all moved to King's Cross. So where you teach will be on the King's Cross campus, won't it?
Yeah. Cool. So the one in Charing Cross was a purpose-built art college. Very unusual.
So I think I was saying on our way up that I did my foundation in Ipswich, and that was a purpose-built art college. And I imagine now it's been... sold off, developed into flats or whatever they do with things. But it's a great pity because purpose-built art schools. Although I did go to... I was very lucky because when I was at uni, we went up to Glasgow to look around Glasgow School of Art, you know, which is a great place. But, amazing. I mean, that hasn't been in operation for quite a long time because they've had all those awful fires, haven't they?
Yeah, so, two they had. And, in fact, my niece does stand-up and she was at... the, what's it called?
Fringe Festival thing.
Edinburgh Fringe, yeah.
So I decided to go to Glasgow to have a look round.
Yeah.
And I tried to get in. Well, I did get in, but then they threw me out.
God, I wouldn't have thought. You're so well known now. Your face is your kind of past into anywhere,
but,
isn't it?
But that was before Sewing Bee.
I guess Sewing Bee has been a bit of a change for you in career, kind of thing. But you look like you enjoy it.
Oh, I do enjoy it. I had to audition, and I think there were about 17 people. The thing is, with me, I never say no to anything. Well, I would say no to do car racing, because I haven't even got a car licence. So.
I think you'd be quite good at it. I think they need to get you on Top Gear and give it a go. You'd be fearless.
I'm not sure about that.
So what I love about when I do bits of teaching, I like the people you're working with. That's where the joy comes from sharing skills and seeing them learn and seeing them develop. Is that the big thing?
It's a real community. So you've got the producers, you've got the sound people, you've got the film people, the cameramen.
Yeah.
And we're all mates and we all get on. It's great. Yeah. It's brilliant. And then the sewers, they all make... they start a WhatsApp group and then they'll have communication from other series. So it is so positive.
Yeah.
Really positive.
I think I quite often use like cooking analogy when I talk about jewellery and why I make jewellery and what I like about jewellery. And it's the thing that it's a person who has an idea in their brain and then they use their hands to express the idea. But then that process only works when somebody else kind of gets it and likes it and wears it. You know, a piece of jewellery or an item of clothing only comes to life when someone looks great in it. So you have to give that to another person or wear it yourself. Do you do much sewing, Con?
I did some sewing classes at Morley College in Waterloo and really loved it. I'm quite an impatient person. I'm very much all or nothing, so I get really into it and I love it and it's the best. And then I make a few mistakes and I'm like, oh God, I'm just terrible.
And you've had enough.
Oh, I was working, you're saying you're getting impatient with things. I was working on this film, an Anthony Minghella film, and there was this French actress in it, quite a famous one, of course I've forgotten her name. Say a few French actors.
Juliette Binoche.
Yes.
Out of the hat.
She was playing a tailor in this film, and so she came to my studio to watch me sewing, and she didn't stay long, but she said, you're in your own world.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it. Solving problems, you know, being creative.
So when I was younger making clothes, we had a treadle, an old treadle singer. And I used to make all my clothes for friends as well. And I can recognise that exactly the same now, because I'm still on the workbench as much as I can. And what I do is I have a little dust down and I get all my little bits and bobs. I make myself a cup of tea. Yesterday I went to bought a packet of biscuits. I put three biscuits there. And then I think, oh, I'm ready now. And I get sit down and I'm in my little... I'm in my little world. And
you made some amazing things.
I had good fun. It was a good day yesterday. But you can look up and it's dark. And people have left. And it's like, oh, what happened there? But that is my happiest place to be. It's a lovely process, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I do like working in a workshop with other people. So I like to come out of it every so often and show someone and say, what do you think? And I think that's one of the nice things about Sewing Bee is that community. And
They're great.
Yeah.
And they help each other.
Oh my gosh, they're good though. Some of them are so flipping good.
Yeah.
You see some of those things they're making. But I was going to say, and I was thinking to say almost the first thing, because I think this is really important, is because you're really a pattern cutter. From what I've learned about you, is you're really keen on pattern cutting and the importance of it. Could you just explain what that is to people?
When we started Swanky Modes, I had never pattern cut. But one of Swanky Modes had been to the Royal College doing menswear. She was really good at pattern cutting.
Yeah.
So she taught me, but she'd say, you have to do it like this. And I'd go, why? And she'd go, that's a very good point.
This is the great thing about teaching people. You have to question your own beliefs and rules. Yeah.
Oh, when I first was teaching at St. Martin's, where it didn't last long, only a few weeks, I go, no, you do that and you do this and you... And then I thought, this isn't what it's about. Mm. It's about their visions and we're enabling them.
Mm.
And also, pattern cutting is something... Think of history, fashion history, how things have changed. So it changes. And so what I say, look at those men's suits that are really tight and have one button here and then you could see the top of their trousers. That would be considered really bad cutting if you were from Savile Row.
Mm.
So I do think it's very interesting. Also making... how different things are made.
So pattern cutting is how you cut the fabric to make it hang, to look like what you want it to do and hang in the right way.
Well, it's turning 2D to 3D.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. And if you think about it, you've got flat fabric and the body, the human body, is 3D.
Yeah.
So a lot of our students do what's called draping and they have a stand and they'll drape the fabric on the stand to make what they want because, you know, they do make over-the-top things.
So I'm friends with Rob Ryan, who does this lovely sort of paper cut art in East London. And he said what got him into being an artist was, as a young child, reading a fairy tale with his mum or dad about the cobbler. He'd leave some leather on the side and the mice would come down in the night and make them into the shoe. And he said what got him was there was this flat stuff.
Oh,
and then in the morning, it was 3D. A beautiful shape that sort of held your foot and made it look. And I realised that that was the same with me and jewellery. And so if I do a jewellery, a little demonstration for people, I'll cut something out of flat and then I'll hammer it and hit it and it'll come up in 3D and it'll become, you know, I can have a block of silver and I can cut and carve and show it to someone and they'll go, oh my gosh, it's a little... And there's emotion, it becomes alive. And that's one of the things I love about Sewing Bee, but one of the things I love about clothing and fashion is that, you know, it can be sexy, it can be powerful, it can be this, that and the other, but it takes on lots of emotions, isn't it, once you...
Oh, definitely. But also cutting and sewing really informs your design.
Mm.
So if you're a good cutter, like Balenciaga was, and Vionnet was an amazing cutter, and Com is actually Alexander McQueen.
Mm.
Yes, it's understanding, changing that 3D, 2D
into 3D.
And it really informs your design?
It's an art, something that sort of I've always sort of battled against a bit. And the problem I had through university is because I really loved fashion, but like I said, I didn't get into fashion at college, and I'm glad I got into jewellery school because I loved learning jewellery and I loved making jewellery. But I'm still interested in fashion, and I proudly call myself a fashion jeweller. But the problem at art school was that if you did something, like the worst insult you could give, because it was an arty art school, if someone said it was commercial, it would be like, that was the worst thing you could say. And it seemed like fashion students were able to do fashion. Jewellery students had to do art for it to have value. You couldn't do fashion. It's like, why fashion seems to be an okay word in fashion worlds, but in other disciplines, if you apply fashion to it, it's somehow devalued.
Well, at St. Martin's, it's all about the students, and they learn so much from each other. Mm. And I always say we're enabling them to do their vision. And quite a lot of them end up as sculptors or painters or, you know. Mm. So we're not saying you can't do this and you can't do that.
Mm.
So
it's just that it was almost like if you're doing fashion jewellery, I think people always, with jewellery, they equated it with the sort of disposable stuff you'd buy out by the checkout counter, you know. So you'd go to a shop and buy something, and then you'd pick up fashion jewellery with sort of plastic stuff. And I was like, no, but that's the stuff that people are wearing. That's the stuff that matters. You know, fashion matters to people.
Yeah.
So stop calling it a sort of disposable byproduct. It's really important. So I don't know, like if I go to the V&A, I can see fashion, I can see clothes. But when you go to the jewellery section, you either see jewellery for kings and queens.
Oh, yes.
Or you see a ball of barbed wire with a feather in it hanging from the ceiling called neck piece number 157. But it's like, where's the bloody fashion jewellery, which is what interests me. Do you know what I mean? It almost seems like there's a gap there in jewellery world. It needs to catch up, I think.
Could be. We've got a dress in the V&A.
But that dress, I love that dress. So just to our listener, and actually, because Connie probably looks... Have you seen Crocodile Dundee? Do you know about that film, Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah, you made me watch it loads.
Sorry, it didn't make you watch. There's a dress in it, and I think it was called the Amorphous Dress.
Yes.
And it is amazing because I don't know how you pattern cut.
It's cut in one piece.
Wow.
And it just has a dart here. It's all in one piece.
Wow.
So if you lay it down flat, it looks a bit like an octopus.
like how the hell am I supposed to get into that kind of thing? I thought it would have been better on someone like Susie Sue. I thought it was quite punky, that dress, actually.
Yes, well, lots of people bought it.
Yeah. It's good having something on the film because people buy it, don't they? And
yes. It was in another film as well, which, of course, I can't remember the name of.
But you have a piece, I think I was reading that you have a piece in the Museum of London,
yes,
which is the padlock. Yeah, the padlock dress, which is, again, it's another... God knows how you... I mean, seeing that on the floor, you must think, how the hell do you get into that? But Grace Jones was gave us a squeal of delight when she saw that one, didn't
yes.
she? Because very
yes.
Grace Jonesy.
Yeah, she loved it. She absolutely...
We could drop names left, right and centre with us, because there's everyone you ever heard of with, you know...
Well, they probably haven't heard of them. That's something that I find quite fascinating, that these names and these artists or whoever are really familiar to me, and lots of them I've met and blah de blah. But young people have never heard of them.
I think your list is so major. Like if you said Grace Jones or David Bowie or the Sex Pistols, everyone's going to go, oh my God, you know, I mean, it just sounds so exciting.
When I first worked at St. Martin's, maybe the third year I was there, I was talking to this student about Sex Pistols. She'd never heard of them.
What?
That's not right, is it?
No.
That was weird.
That is weird. I agree.
I think that should
that
be on the interview questions. Because punk, I mean, if you're studying fashion, punk has got to be... I know it's my era, but it hit us all in the way that we do things. And I mean, that was why I moved to London. I just came. Yeah. I remember coming to the King's Road and just thinking, "Oh, I've arrived home now. I'm all right because I've made it from Ipswich to the King's Road, and all the punks were there." And then I bought, I went straight to, it wasn't called Sex Anymore, I think it was called Boy, that an incarnation of...
That was a different
Is it different people?
Yeah, it was round the corner.
Oh, okay. From... I went to Boy, I didn't go to Sex, I went to Boy, I got the wrong shop. I bought a great T-shirt, which I've still got, and it has, in big letters, it has Leave the Boy Alone on it.
I think I've seen that one.
Yeah, still got it. And with my Wham T-shirt.
There was quite a famous designer who was in that shop, not the Boy shop, but the Sex Pistols.
The sex shop. That was Vivian Westwood.
Yes, it was
Malcolm
called,
McLaren.
It was called Let It Rock.
Right.
Then it was called Sex.
Right.
But there was, I forgot, remember his name. He did T-shirts with stars and things on. But it was the 60s, so late 60s.
Yeah, this was probably early 80s when I sort of finally arrived there and saw. There weren't that many shops. I mean, there was your shop and there was, you know, a couple of shops. There was sort of Kensington Market, was it?
Oh, that was great.
Which was great. It was quite specific where you could sort of go to buy things. And I had friends who would make clothes. I had a friend who was a knitter. And she would make clothes at home. They'd go down to Vogue House and ask to, you know, if they could show some of the people there, and they'd go in and show them, and you'd get it in Vogue, and you'd, and then you'd get a stall at Kensington Market. It was just, you could just sort of do stuff and make it happen.
That's what we did. Me and Mel, who was one of Swanky Mates, we'd get tarted up and we'd go round to various newspapers and show them. And one of them was Nova Magazine, which you for sure has never heard of.
I remember Nova Magazine.
Oh, it was a really cool magazine. And it was mostly about women, but not just fashion. All sorts of different things that women did.
Oh, brilliant.
And we did these plastic mats that were made from shower curtain fabric. And we showed Caroline Baker, she was the fashion editor, and she really liked them. And there was going to be an edition called April Showers. So she was very, very keen for... So she said she thought Helmut Newton... You probably haven't heard of...
I've heard of Helmut Newton, yeah.
All right, we're all right there. We have to check every now and then.
Fact check it.
So she said, well, do some drawings and send them to him. Well, she would send them. So I did these drawings with naked women underneath, because think about it, you know, shirt guns, kind of see-through. And he photographed them just like I had drawn them.
Great. That's
and,
great.
And then the editor didn't want them to go in because it was naked women, but Caroline persuaded them.
Good old Caroline.
Well, you'd think, I suppose one of the drawbacks about those days is you'd think after all of your influence, and you have had a big influence on fashion and the way that we would think about fashion and the development of fashion, you'd think that you'd sort of be living in a palace in Kensington, you know, it sort of would be sort of retiring a little. But one of the drawbacks is that it was all sort of done on a shoestring, wasn't it? And it was all done... You sort of, as long as you had enough money to
pay,
go and
the
have,
rent.
Pay the rent and go for a drink with your mates or whatever it was, you know.
Yeah.
It was all just sort of quite day to day. And certainly when I had my first studio, you didn't really think about anything else. It was just a bit of, well, you were having a great time. And I probably think that's quite a big difference now with young people setting out on a fashion career. You need to be a bit more sort of focused, don't you?
Well, because think of London. Think how expensive it is to live here. I mean, you know, young people, other than rich young people, couldn't afford to live here. They couldn't live here. They couldn't get a studio. You know, and for us, it was nothing to do with money other than us being able to have enough money to live.
Yeah, and you wanted to get your materials and get your sewing machine fixed and stuff. But there was also lots of... you know, half of London was really uninhabitable. So you could get a studio really cheap.
Yes.
I mean, in those days, like Clerkenwell, all that area, there was loads of empty warehouses. So you could find some old freezing cold space to work in and just make something, go into a shop and sell it. It seems much more doable. So I have three daughters. Another daughter is a fine artist, and it's really a choice for her between a studio or moving out of home. And so it's quite difficult, isn't it? It's a different landscape.
My niece, who makes jewellery, she's moved to Margate. She can't afford to be in London.
Yeah, it's, I think it's a pity because there are more... The way I always thought about it is if you have a little shop or a stall somewhere in London, probably every other person could buy a piece of your jewellery. They've got enough spare cash to buy. Yes. Whereas in Margate, it's probably one in 20, you know, the people that could just splash a bit of cash on a new thing on a whim. I moved to London. I think I moved to London to escape, to be able to express myself. And I think I moved to London because of fashion and music. And then it was an enabler. I was able to work and pay the rents and stuff. So I just think it's really tough for you youngers. So
I live in Brighton now, which is as expensive, but less expensive.
Just southeast in general, I think. Yeah. It's just anywhere in the southeast you're going to be, it's going to cost you a lot. But it is a shame because that's how you make those connections with people. And like you're saying, when you were starting off in your career, that sense of community kind of spurs you on when you've not got much financial support. Those people, those allies, kind of keep you moving forward.
And that was something I was thinking, you mentioned, Esme, that, you know, unless you've got lots of money. And I think a lot of highly creative young people are that way because they don't have lots of money. I think if you give someone... I mean, I remember... I don't know how you feel or if you remember this, but I remember very distinctly when Next opened on the High Street. Yeah. And when I was a youngster in London, if you were fashion conscious, you worked hard to put together your look. You'd go to Camden, you'd buy secondhand, you'd go Lawrence Corner, whatever it was. You worked really hard to put your look together and you'd have these finds and then you might alter them back at your home or whatever and then you'd go out and look good. But then High Street chains opened where you could just buy, if you had the money, you could buy a very good look. You could pop in, buy a look, kaboom, done. But there was no work and no self-expression. Mm. And I felt like there was quite a lot of blandness around, and there still is today.
It's so changed, the High Street and things. Also, most of it's not sustainable.
That's the big issue. That's something we're quite struggling with at the moment, making jewellery, just trying to check everything and make it all sustainable, or at least as sustainable as possible. Have you got any jewellery for us? Well, you're wearing lots of lovely jewellery, but have you got any jewellery for us to see? Yes!
I brought loads because I couldn't decide. I hate diamonds.
Well, there's a great documentary. We'll put the link on called...
Oh, my goodness.
Called Nothing Lasts Forever.
These are the ones I made for the sewing bee. So one is... I don't know if you know, one of them I dressed up at the finale. No, I think it was the... celebrity one. I was a cheese, and so I thought I've got to make a necklace.
So you're still, that hasn't changed. If you have a vision or an idea, you just make it yourself.
Yeah, and then
that's what's so lovely.
This one.
I love this one. This is the holy cheese.
My goodness.
Listen, can I just say to our listener, like, there's this brilliant bag of colour and craziness. It's fantastic.
This one. I also wore in the sewing bee, and it was sanitizers. You know, when COVID was really going on. I forgot, and the crew would wear them on their
on their hips.
Yes, on their belt loops and all that.
During COVID, I think we sponsored a young person's jewellery event in town, and they were all kind of art student jewellers, and several of them were wearing necklaces and jewellery made from the COVID tests, and they sort of painted them and put holes in them and hung them, and
people started doing that if they had negative COVID tests, instead of, because people would always ask, they'd just wear it as earrings. It's like two negatives.
It was so good. So this is the hand sani sort of necklace, which is it's so crazy. It's great.
So I wore that for...
You can sort of hear... I'm going to do it near the microphone. You can kind of hear. It's got these lovely carabiners, these brightly coloured anodised aluminium carabiners.
I'm not quite sure what's going on because it was flat. Now I'm not quite sure.
I think it's been connected up, you know. Yeah. We could just... The effect's there. And it sounds brilliant. And then all the little hand sani displays are full of different coloured paints. And it just looks... It's so lovely that you're sort of making these things. Oh, Sophie, you've had fun making your outfits and stuff.
Oh, yes. I always make one or two things that I then wear on them. But I'm thinking now, next time, of mending things.
Yeah, nice.
And turning them into something else.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
I no longer. I used to go to jumble sales all the time.
Background sound of Esme's jewellery here. So.
But I don't buy clothes from charity shops. One reason is I can't get into them.
Yeah.
And the other reason is it's from an era that I lived through. So when I used to buy things at jumble sales, I bought them from the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
So it was different, you know.
I can't believe it sometimes. I look in a charity shop and I think, oh my God, you know, who'd wear that? But for my kids' generation, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so cool, this stuff. But if you've lived through it, it's a whole
I've never really thought about that. Yeah, because I guess a lot of the clothes that we would find...
A lot of wooden 80s, aren't they?
Yeah, and I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't look back, you know, to 2015 and go, that's what I want.
That's a good look.
Yeah. But from charity shops, I buy books and jewellery.
Nice.
And I buy sewing books.
Yeah.
I've got a big collection. Not that I ever look at them. But they're from lots of different periods.
Was there more in there?
Oh, God.
She's got a backpack full, Esme. This is great. This is.
Well, I couldn't decide.
I love it. I love it.
Give it a while.
I mean...
This is what we want. This is so fantastic.
Oh, my goodness. It just keeps going.
I've got a friend who I work with.
Wow. This is such a treat for me as a jeweller. This is such a treat as me to actually see your jewellery close up. Yeah.
So this is great, isn't it?
It's amazing. So it's a sort of kind of leathery. I mean, it looks a bit like seagrass, but it's leather. And there's a million strands. I suppose it looks slightly kind of perhaps sort of North African or something.
I think
in the feel. And it almost looks like it could be a sort of North African brush or something, but it's beautiful and it would sit. Do you ever? I mean, you're wearing so much gorgeous jewellery at the moment. Do you ever go out without jewellery on?
No,
I love that. We love it.
Yeah,
great.
Is that always going to nick that?
well, the problem is that you know we were talking earlier about your niece and talking about how we just do what we do as designers. You sort of do what you do. It's you're expressing. And I often want to make something big, and I go on the workbench, and by the time it's time to go home, I've got this tiny weeny blooming thing, and I was like, oh. I've done it small again. I can't, you know. And so I'm sort of slightly jealous of... Got great friends who do it. Do you know a company called Tatty Divine?
Yes.
So Rosie and Harriet are old friends, and they just do brilliant stuff. And I'm so jealous that they can do something on this kind of scale, you know, in bright colours. But I just end up with a tiny little...
squirrel.
Yes, little squirrel. That's so lovely. So this is your friend buying them for you.
So he bought me that one.
So this
bought me
this necklace. I mean,
is all different things.
This is a treasure trove. What's nice about these things is they've been made by people. They've just had fun. There's colour and there's gold and there's shininess, and you just feel like someone's had a tremendous time making that, don't you?
Yeah.
And it has been made by someone to be really fun and look great. And it feels, these feel like they're going to wear. You just feel really nice. I feel nice wearing it. They sit on the chest really nicely. It's got a great weight.
I love it. They almost look like little sweeties, all of the different coloured beads,
well,
don't
I
they?
I think quite a lot of jewellery looks like sweeties. Do you think these look like sweeties?
Yeah.
The chain on that. So this is like multicoloured painted wooden beads and probably some ceramic beads, and then all wrapped up with gold chain. So it's sort of got this great weight. It sits really nicely on the chest. And it's so colourful.
He also bought this, which is... Spot. I mean, he's probably bought me 20 necklaces.
Where's he going to buy this stuff? I mean, look
at
this.
Well, he just, wherever he goes, he looks, he thinks Esme would like that.
That's so
lovely.
Nice, isn't it?
So this
necklace is, I'm just highly envious of whoever made this, because it is... It's big, bright, sparkly. It's got this sort of tiers of green. They're all obviously pastes, and proudly pastes. And these great big pearls. And it's sort of another one. I can't resist with all these pieces. You just want to put them on your... You want to lay them on your chest to see. Because jewellery feels as well as looks.
Do you wear jewellery?
Not a thing. Also, look at my stupid fashion sense. Do you know what was nice? I've had guests before who have been sort of younger, sort of style icon people, and I've had to change 3 times before I came in. But so, yeah, both jewellery and fashion, I let the team down.
You do wear sometimes a little silver chain, don't you, Alex? Just the chain on
its own. I think I have a secret you know, desire to go. So I was looking with the kids and I wanted to buy some sort of, I like things with gold on, like white and gold. So I've got a secret desire, but if I'm in the workshop a lot.
You got some good things.
Isn't this lovely?
That's so fabulous.
And it feels nice. I mean, yeah. You feel special in it.
Yeah, definitely.
So beautiful.
That is brilliant.
I'm very jealous of people that can make this stuff because they're so big and bold and brave and
confident.
And confident in what they do. That's so lovely. I mean, this is, we've just got bags and bags. I mean, this is...
You know what? I buy things from all over the world.
Yeah.
So this I bought in Japan.
Oh.
And it's from the north of Japan.
That I wouldn't associate with Japan because...
No, because it's...
It's quite big and bold again, you
yes.
know.
Well, it's old. It's really yeah. old. And can you see he's a little vertebrae?
Backbone.
Batman.
Wow.
That you would associate more with that. You'd sort of see it in a museum with perhaps a sort of African culture or something like
well,
that.
Well, it looks African, but it's from, well, that's what the woman I bought it off said.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're in Japan, it's Japanese, great. So what this is just to describe for our listener, is it's these triangle wedges of dark wood that have been carved, have got patterns carved into them, and it's strung on a sort of hempy type of string, but between each triangle of wood, there's some sort of polished bits of backbone, so it sort of feels a little bit, I don't know.
Well, not got, human backbone.
No, oh gosh, no, listener, this is, it's a very brilliant, it's a nice looking mix, and again, I want to sort of lay it on me, see how that...
Wow.
It's great, isn't it?
So
great.
Cool.
Amazing.
I mean, everything... What's weird, with all your jewellery, is me. When I've done other podcasts and you see something beautiful, you sort of look at it and I look at it through a lens and you're like, oh, isn't this... And you sort of hold it in hands. But you're the first one where I just go, oh, everything you have to sort of hold
place
up to you
chest.
Because this is very much jewellery as fashion, isn't it? These pieces are going to come alive when you wear them. I want an exhibition. I want a little Esme Young's jewellery exhibition.
One side of it broke, so I've tied not very
A bit of ribbon.
Bits of ribbon. But it was elastic before.
Yeah, I don't think that matters, does it? Because it's all
care.
Hand of the maker, isn't it?
Yeah.
At every turn. So we could just go on. May I?
Yeah, these ones every year at St. Martin's, we do a Balenciaga project.
Yeah.
And we go to Bilbao, and then we go to his museum where he was brought up. And every year, normally I will go for the weekend, I'll stay, because Bilbao's great.
Yeah.
So the first time I went, I thought I'd stay, I got an Airbnb, because I wanted to explore it.
Yeah.
So every time I go, I buy a necklace. But they're all really similar, but different colours.
So what I've got, just for this, there's a clear carrier bag, and this is like, you know, if you went shopping and you only bought food for like a couple of days, this is like a carrier bag, like it's got weight to it, and it's full of stuff. But it's full of, I mean, what I'm seeing is gold and pale blue and pinks and flesh.
And
colours
white,
and whites
and cream.
That's quite a special colour palette in there, actually. That sort of it all goes quite well just together as a colour palette.
But
I want to pull some out because it's so beautiful. This does remind me a bit of when I was young, sort of playing with your mother or grandmother's jewellery box, which I think is quite an important memory, and because they would have this sort of big and bold jewellery.
Wow. It's nice, isn't it?
I'm kind of lost for words.
Oh, I love the dangly bits, like under the main central flower of that one.
It's so textured.
Mmm.
Yeah, these are all from Bilbao. And I don't know why. When I first went, I found this shop that sold them. So the next time I was thinking, where the hell's that shop? But I found it.
I've got a brother who lives in Biarritz. And so,
right.
I've never been to Bilbao. I've got no excuse now.
It's very nice.
Isn't that great? It kind of goes with my colour and my blue
really
top.
It's really great. I think you would really suit some more jewellery.
It's about confidence, isn't it?
I think it looks great.
That's well, look, I'm going to get you.
I love how this is the moment where you've realised. How many years have you been doing jewellery?
I still want to pull these out.
If that was all gold and with stones in.
Yeah, you should do a collection.
Oh, I think that would be really expensive.
Yeah. But then I can argue, I'll ask
I would want to see Esme do something with Chatty Divine or someone, because they'd be much better at sort of, you know, expressing your this boldness.
Yeah, it does remind me a bit of jewellery. I think just like how big it is, and also
it's really nice to have
quite 3D.
Like the jewellery you're wearing at the moment, Esme. Although interesting, you have a little sparkly ring. Yes. You know, a very tiny, very sparkly little thing on one finger.
I think they're diamonds, but I'm not sure.
I think
they
were
my mum's. She wore this as her wedding ring.
Aww. How lovely. Yeah. Did
I think she probably threw away the gold one. Maybe she was having a row with my dad.
Can I just say, I mean, I had this all, like I say, I've been distracted because this is awesome. I had this all sorted out, but something that struck me doing, you know, a bit of research over the past couple of days was what a sweetheart your dad was. He just sounds like the most gorgeous man.
Oh, he was fantastic. Really, really fantastic. And he always said to me, you must do what you want to do.
Because I can sort of identify, because I've got three daughters, and it sounds like, you know, you came to London, went to St. Martin's, and it was all cool and exciting. And, you know, when you cut your hair funny and wear funny clothes or whatever you do, sort of perhaps for a mother, that's a bit more challenging and harder to accept. But it just sounds like your dad was just there for you the whole time. And he was.
My mum wouldn't walk down the street with me. Because she was so embarrassed about how I looked.
But she was a woman of her time. So maybe, maybe some sort of... But
it's fine.
It just put a lump in my throat and made my heart sort of skip a beat. When hearing about your dad, he just sounded like such a sweetheart. He was just totally with you the whole time and accepting.
He was an amazing man.
Which is quite something for a man of his generation who was an RAF pilot in the war, shot down, went through some pretty horrific things. Yeah.
I think, though, something occurred to me quite recently is that he really wanted to be a pilot, because his sister had a boyfriend who used to deliver newspapers, and he invited my father to go with him, and he taught him to fly an airplane. And his dad, my father's dad, wanted him to be a solicitor, but he really, really wanted to fly. And his mum said to his father, look, there's going to be a war and he will join up, so let him get trained.
Mm.
And so I think because she said, let him do what he's passionate about, and that's what happened to him. I think that's in a way what he said to me as well.
It's great, isn't it, to have at least one kind of rock solid bit of support behind you as you go through all this craziness, because there must have been times when you were in a squat, you know, not being able to pay the rent and doing these crazy things.
We didn't have to pay rent. I can remember him coming to the squat in Elgin Ave, and there was some cat poo on the stairs, which he stepped into, and he went, but he didn't go, can you imagine, in his tweed jacket.
The smart suit. It's great. Yeah, this is, I'm kind of speechless with this jewellery. It's just amazing. I need to find this shop. This one I particularly love with all the pinks, and then it's got these kind of half shells on it. But the pinks, I love this pink colour because it's like flesh. You know, there's a really nice fleshy colour on the bottom there.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it, how
the colours all, I'm going to keep handing them.
Pastel-y colours.
Yeah, so and so we've got another kind of quite fleshy. These are what I would sort of associate with that region and that designer is. They're quite flamboyant floral patterns made out of cut. Well, I'm going to say stones. I don't know. I suppose they're cut. They're synthetics, you know, in some way. But I love the fleshy colours, and I love flesh and gold. Is a
and
great
don't
colour
you
combo.
Think, I think...
Sorry, wrong way up, but yeah.
These pieces...
Amazing.
...are interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they're like little doilies.
Yeah.
But I wonder if someone sort of found them and thought that would make a nice back, and then they've sort of sewn all these things. I don't know how that's made.
Maybe they're glued on. Oh, that one's coming off. There's obviously one that's come off from there. Mm. And these are put on because that's sharp bit.
Yeah, to make it so if you haven't got any, if it's against your flesh. But I love the colours, and I love the I'm loving. So this is something quite different to what I do, because it's all about colour as well. But so you've got this flesh and gold, and then you've got this pale blue and gold, and then I was just loving the way that the colours work together.
This one here, this white one.
Oh my gosh, we've got the whole table's covered. We need
and
to
I've
get
a... tried to oh. mend it. Well, I have mend it, but not very well. I have to arrange it.
Yeah, it needs to be laid out a bit better, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, it will go flat, that middle one.
But you need to arrange it on you, and then you can't do any.
I think this is my favourite one out of this bag.
This one is.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got a little bit of wire up there just holding it all together. Yeah. I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In fact, I've got quite a few things that are broken that I need to get fixed.
Well, a lot of these are fixed with thread, so wouldn't that be your thing?
Well, there's one I got someone from St Martin's who's studying jewellery to fix, and he put thread on it, but it broke really quickly.
Oh, wrong thread.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of this actually has a kind of a sort of fishing nylon in it, which is, you know, pretty much unbreakable. You know, it's really good,
well,
strong stuff.
That's what I put in.
Oh, that's you. Yeah, not the original. I wonder what the original. No, I think the original is that fishing thread too. Yeah, you can sort of see it.
So, yeah, I used it to mend it. There's another necklace I want to check. Like,
come on, let's have a look. I love it. I love
like
this tape.
You're saying that I buy things from where I go.
So here's another flowery one. This one's done in sort of ivory, crystal and gold.
Think that's and the first one I bought.
And it's got these little pads on the back, which are just stop it being scratchy.
Oh, wow.
We need an exhibition.
That's quite funky, even how those flowers are, because they're quite... They're almost quite, like, spiky, aren't they?
Everything's good about this necklace.
Very spiky.
I love it. Sorry, I love it.
It's great.
It's so good.
Oh, this is so fun, isn't this? This is how it should be. We've got a table.
This is the best collection I think we've seen here.
No offense to anyone else.
No, we have all of our guests.
So, to be honest, it's been interesting because we've had military men on with medals, and that's a form of jewellery.
He's got the Sword of Honour as well. We've got this sword from my brother's.
Have you got it? Oh, wait, I thought you had it above your mantle. So
I was worried
about home.
No, my brother's.
I'm not sure which one it
is.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry.
I love this. Do you know...
This should be.
This is so... Oh, thank you so much for bringing this in, Esme.
I mean,
listener, you would understand why we're losing things, because this is a rucksack full of amazing treasures.
That's so annoying. Because... Oh, no, it's in here.
Is it in there?
When I was going to have my 60th birthday, my family wanted to get me something. Yeah. So I used to go every Sunday with my brother for a meal, and we always went to the same place. And he said, what would you like? And I went, oh, either a sapphire or a ruby. And then we were chatting, and then he said, what do you think about going to Iran? And I went...
What?
Yes, let's go to Iran. So this is a necklace I bought in Iran.
That's so beautiful. Obviously, photos of this are going to go on the website, and these, you need to see photos, listen up, because
this
it's so
is
visual.
Amazing.
But this is a beautiful necklace. So it's strings of natural rough cut stones that have been drilled through in sort of sections. So there's a yellowy and black, and then there's a bit of lapis that's been cut that separates it off into the next bit, which are all green. And I imagine there's sort of variants of emerald on this green.
Do you think?
Well,
wow.
But every stone, you know, you get all the sort of rough bits that don't really have much value, and then there's a beautiful orange stone.
Is that the technical way?
That's what I did.
But I'm none the wiser. What do you think? I mean, it's a stone of something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
It's like an amber.
But it's got lovely bits of lapis. Yeah. I mean, so the colours, you've got pearls, and then this beautiful turquoise colour. I need to put my glasses back on. This beautiful turquoise colour, which you don't see that.
Yes, it's strange, isn't
it? Dark turquoise like that. And then there's some, what looks like a venturine with this lovely sort of greeny, yellowy. But what's nice is there's, you know, often if you have lapis, it's like bright, bright blue, strong blue. But this is all sort of mottled. And so all the colours are quite muted. Then there are these lovely greens, which are obviously a stone. It's a green stone in sort of pebble form that's been polished and then drilled. And then there's more pearls, more lapis. Then there's this very dark blue, which I suppose could well be a dark lapis, I don't know. Then pearls and then maybe sort of citrine-y yellows. I mean, it's just great.
It's amazing. It's almost like a sun.
So that's your 60s.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously the holiday. And
well,
this
the holiday
well.
Was, yeah.
How was it?
Oh, it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. So that was in 2000 and I can't remember. 16, maybe.
Thank you.
I love that necklace.
That's beautiful.
I mean, you know, when you think of the history of Iran,
yeah.
I mean, Persepolis and all those different places that are absolutely amazing. And the people there were really gorgeous, really, really helpful, nice, welcoming. I want to show you this.
Oh, God, yeah, God, on. Carry on all day for all I care. This is amazing. This is
one my sister made for me. And
wow.
It's...
What?
She knits wire.
Are you joking me?
And these pearls from one of my mum's necklaces.
Oh.
Your family... They take you to Iran and they knit you amazing necklaces.
Sorry. It's
You're all
amazing,
right with that lot.
Isn't it?
I've got to put it on again, sorry. Blueberry's looking unimpressed. What's the matter with you? This is amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
So what does she do? Is she an artist?
I've never heard anyone that knits.
Well, she does exhibitions and things, but her husband's quite rich, so she's all right. But she's
great.
She's just knitted the Grand Canyon.
What? You need to send us a picture.
Metal.
That's amazing. I don't understand.
How? How does that...
Whoa. I've no idea, actually, how you knit
metal. How she does
metal.
That. But I love all of the little
crystals
throughout
it. But it's funny because it reminds me of the story that you told us earlier on about sort of making a... weaving a grass house, you know,
yes.
When you're at school. I mean, you're all still at it. This is beautiful. So this is knitted. These are sort of knitted flowers in an amazing sort of spiral shape, each of them, and they're wired together, and they've got, you know, along the knitting there's lots of sort of crystally stones and pearls and things, so it's pretty spectacular. Over to you, Ed.
That's beautiful. That's me.
Wow. Well, okay, so we need an exhibition.
Yeah, I'd love to see them all.
Have you worn all of these on the sewing bee yet, or are they
quite particular?
I don't
think I've worn that one.
Yeah.
But I think I've worn all the others.
Sort of recognise some of these. Oh, some of these
this.
Ones. This one I reckon. Yeah, this is great.
Yes.
So,
I brought this one because it's from the 1980s.
Yeah.
And it's one of my friends who was a stylist, and she styled all, because every season Swanky Modes would do a photo shoot,
yeah,
and she'd be the one that styled it.
Yeah.
And when she stopped styling, she got rid of her jewellery she had, and she gave it
nice.
To me. And I have a workshop with 3 costume designers, so I said, are you interested? And they took most of it, but I said I wanted that one.
Yeah.
This one I'm interested in because I remember being quite influenced by kind of Mondrian and those simple colours. The dress, which I couldn't find a photo of, a particular dress I made for my friend Jackie because it was a big party night. It was made of, it was clear plastic, and in the kind of areas where you don't want to see through, it had white backing. But it was sewn with black, sort of zigzag stitches, in a grid pattern.
Mm.
And then I was cutting little bits of perspex and putting them in so they moved around in the red, blue and black sort of Mondrian sort of colour, and bits of yellow in there as well. And that was sort of based on, I think those sort of Mondriani sort of colours and things were quite a thing at the time.
Yeah.
And the dress looked, you know, pretty grim in the end. But but it was good fun. And so this sort of reminds me, this would have been the necklace to have worn with it.
So you're saying it was plastic... see-through plastic,
yeah,
and you did zigzag stitch on.
Yeah, it was, the whole thing was a nightmare.
Well, you're lucky it didn't rip apart.
Do you know, I don't think she actually wore it out. So somewhere I do have a photo of her standing in our hallway in the dress, because I think she was probably being charitable. And I don't think it ever really got worn, because it was, you know. That wasn't the point. I mean, you must have done that. It was, you had an idea, you found materials, and you cracked on and made it. And that was the fun of the time, wasn't it? So,
yeah. We did this. We were asked, have you heard of Midjour?
Yes. Yeah. Have you heard of Midjour? We're going for the youngest here.
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
I don't think I know. I'm not familiar.
Well, he was in a boy band before he went off on his own, and their manager asked us to make something for them.
Yeah.
And they were very keen on baseball clothes, so we would cut out the letters, and I just suddenly went, "Hang on a minute." So we did these T-shirts where we cut out shapes. So one said swank on here. Mm. There was one on your bottom that said swanky.
I want that one. I want that one already.
But you know, Phil Manzanera, do you know who he is?
The name rings a bell, but...
He was in Roxy Music.
Right,
guitarist
yeah.
in Roxy Music. I hadn't realised we'd made him too.
Oh.
And he sent me the pictures. I completely
so
forgot.
Brilliant.
One
it's
said
so brilliant.
Phil and one said swank.
Happy days. It was so nice. Yeah, it was the good
yes.
fun. And that sort of thing was quite accessible. Esri, thank you. Thank you. Sorry, I've taken too much of your time. The taxi's here to take you away. And we've got the biggest mess to clear up. So I'm going to remember. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing... this is brilliant what
yeah.
you've bought all this
taking
stuff.
Taking
it over.
I love it.
Thank
I love
you.
It. Thank you for listening to my podcast. If you'd like to see some of the pieces we've been talking about, or for more information about any of the issues we've discussed, please check out our website and follow the links to the podcast page. You'll also find information on how to share your own stories, give a bit of feedback, or have a look at all the jewellery-related things I've been up to recently. We've also got some great jewellery-making tutorials on our YouTube channel. There's lots to see. Just go to www.alexmonroe.com.